Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Please be seated. The Gospel of John is like the Twitter version of the life of Christ. It's more than 140 characters, but nevertheless, it's short and concise. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. I am the voice of one crying out from the wilderness, and I came baptizing with water for this reason. One of the two who heard John speak was Andrew. He brought Simon, who brought Philip, who brought Nathanael, and the rest followed. But then on the third day, there is a wedding. Now this past week, I got to participate in a gospel-based discipleship study group of our gospel passage for today. And if I say it correctly, what is gospel-based discipleship? You take the gospel passage and then you read it three times. And we read it with three very distinctly different translations. So you read the gospel, and then you ask the question, what words, ideas, or phrases stand out for you? Then you read the gospel. What is Jesus or the gospel saying to you? Then you read the gospel. What is Jesus or the gospel calling you to do? I didn't say a word because I was surrounded by really intelligent, thought-filled colleagues, and I was feeling rather overwhelmed by their insights. And all I could hear was a really cranky young adult talking back to his mother saying, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." So while I studied all the readings for today, the Gospel of John didn't really stand out to me. It couldn't. Jesus was being cranky. And there was a lot going on in my crazy week. And I don't mean just the craziness that David Bowie, Professor Snape, and Grizzly Adams all died in one week. I really did not need cranky. All I could really hear were the words from Isaiah and Psalm 36. If you reread Isaiah 62, the first line, "For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent. And for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until her vindication shines out like the dawn and her salvation like a burning torch." Psalm 36, line 5. "Your steadfast love, O Lord, extends to the heavens and your faithfulness to the clouds." That is what I needed to hear. So what stood out for me in my not-so gospel-based discipleship? In the Good News translation of Isaiah, it reads, "It will not be possible to make me shut up. I will talk and not stop talking, proclaim and not stop proclaiming. I will preach and not stop preaching. I will shake the skies with my voice. I will not pause. I will not rest for the sake of the precious city God loved and left, and I will keep this up until every nation and king can see that Jerusalem has been declared innocent and lifted up to a place of glory and honor." I hear, "I will not keep silent." What stands out? "My Lord's love is steadfast and everywhere." This past week, we learned that the Anglican Communion has decided it needs to think and pray for a while as a worldwide collective group and determine how to go forward with different opinions, respectfully agreeing to disagree. The Anglican Communion is made up of 44 different countries and 38 different provinces. I have absolutely no idea how many languages that would include or how many different cultural experiences and histories that it might be filled with. And the Episcopal Church of the United States of America is just one piece of this collective. This coming week, we celebrate the life and works of the Reverend Martin Luther King, Jr., and all who helped make a difference. On March 25, 1965, in Montgomery, Alabama, in a sermon titled "Our God is Marching On," Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. said, quote, "Now it is not an accident that one of the great marches of American history should terminate in Montgomery, Alabama. Just 10 years ago, in this very city, a new philosophy was born of the Negro struggle. Montgomery was the first city in the South in which the entire Negro community united and squarely faced its age-old oppressors. Out of this struggle, more than bus desegregation was won. A new idea, more powerful than guns or clubs, was born. Negroes took it and carried it across the South in epic battles that electrified the nation and the world. Yet strangely, the climactic conflicts always were fought and won on Alabama soil. After Montgomery, heroic confrontations loomed up in Mississippi, Arkansas, Georgia, and elsewhere. But not until the colossus of segregation was changed in Birmingham did the conscience of America begin to bleed. While Americans and America was profoundly aroused by Birmingham because it witnessed the whole community of Negroes facing terror and brutality with majestic scorn and heroic courage. And from the wells of this democratic spirit, the nation finally forced Congress to write legislation in the hope that it would eradicate the stain of Birmingham. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 gave Negroes some part of their rightful dignity, but without the vote, it was dignify and dignity without strength. Once more, the method of nonviolent resistance was unsheathed from its scabbard, and once again, an entire community was mobilized to confront the adversary. And again, the brutality of a dying order shrieked across the land. Yet Selma, Alabama, became a shining moment in the consciences of man. If the worst in America life, if the worst in America's life lurked in its dark streets, the best of America's instincts arose passionately from across the nation to overcome it. There never was a moment in American history more honorable and more inspiring than the pilgrimage of clergymen and laymen of every race and faith pouring into Selma to face danger at the side of its embattled Negroes. The confrontation of good and evil compressed in the tiny community of Selma generated the massive power to turn the whole nation to a new course. A president born in the South had the sensitivity to feel the will of the country. And in an address that will live in history as one of the most passionate pleas for human rights ever made by a president of our nation, he pledged the might of the federal government to cast off the centuries-old blight. President Johnson rightly praised the courage of the Negro for awakening the consciousness of the nation. Unquote. I will not keep silent. What stands out? My Lord's love is steadfast, is everywhere, and is for everyone. So let's return to Lambeth, England, and our presiding bishop, the Most Reverend Michael Curry. He explained the Anglican Communion's discussion like this, quote, "This is not the outcome we expected. And while we are disappointed, it is important to remember that the Anglican Communion is really not a matter of structure and organization. The Anglican Communion is a network of relationships that have been built on mission partnerships. Relationships that are grounded in a common faith, relationships in companion diocese relationships, relationships with parish to parish across the world, relationships that are profoundly committed to serving and following the way of Jesus of Nazareth by helping the poorest of the poor, and helping this world to be a place where no child goes to bed hungry ever." That's what the Anglican Communion is, and that communion continues and moves forward. But it is important to remember that we are still part of the Anglican Communion. We are the Episcopal Church, and we are part of the Jesus movement. And that movement goes on, and our work goes on. And the truth is, it may be part of our vocation to help the communion and to help many others to grow in a direction where we can realize and live the love that God has for all of us. And we can one day be a church and a communion where all of God's children are fully welcomed, where there is truly a house of prayer for all people. And maybe it's part of our vocation to help that to happen. And so we must claim that higher calling, claim the high calling of love and faith. Love even for those with whom we disagree, and then continue. And we will do it together. We are part of the Jesus movement, and the cause of God's love in this world cannot stop and will never be defeated. Unquote. I hear, I will not be kept silent. What stands out? My Lord's love is steadfast. It is for everyone, and it is everywhere, and maybe, just maybe, our job is to help others to understand that. Oh, darn. Maybe today's lessons really do tie together, even though Jesus is being cranky. Again, what did Jesus say? Woman, what concern is it to you and to me that there is no wine? My hour has not yet come. Jesus' hour had not yet come. He was referring to his death, his resurrection, and his ascension in the Gospel of John. Jesus just wasn't ready. Maybe a lot of the Anglican communion is not ready. Much of the southern United States was not ready. Histories and cultures were not and may not be ready. Jesus thought it was too soon for miracles to start. Some may have thought it was too soon for equality of all people in the United States. Some may believe it is too soon to have equality of all gender orientations. Yet our cranky Jesus still performed his first miracle. The stone jars at the wedding, which would have been huge containers capable of holding 20 to 30 gallons of water each, now there was enough wine for the whole village, and it was better than the first round. The baptismal water of possibility was turned into the blood of resurrection and love. What do I hear? I should not keep silent, because the love of our Lord reaches everywhere. What stands out? Nothing should shut me up. I will talk, and I will not stop talking. I will proclaim, and I will not stop proclaiming. I will preach, and I will not stop preaching. What is Jesus calling me to do? I believe he is calling me to be part of the conversation, to build relationships, to maintain healthy, honest relationships, because God's love for this world and for her children will never stop and will never be defeated.